Hello, podcast listeners, and welcome to another episode of Living Well with Kathleen Saunders, your weekly podcast where we discuss the financial, physical, spiritual, and social well-being of everyday people like you and me. The information shared in this show is for general information purposes only and should not be used to make any personal changes to your lifestyle or health without consulting the appropriate financial, medical, or healthcare professionals. Hello, Living Well listeners, and welcome to another podcast. My guest today is Hadriana Leo. Hadriana is the Money Navigator. Her own experiences with failing at managing her family's finances led her to create the Money Navigator mythology. This unique system acknowledges that debt is crippling families and budgets don't work. As a result, Hadriana provides targeted assistance to help professionals and small business owners to rapidly reduce debt and manage cash flow so they can avert financial crisis, often without having to earn a penny more and with no product sales and no commissions. This groundbreaking approach combines both math and mindset so that clients experience results that stick. Hadriana brings emotional intelligence to personal finance. Welcome, Hadriana, and thank you for being my guest today.
Thank you, Kathleen. I'm so happy to be here.
And I am really excited about our conversation today, as cash flow planning is a big deal and something we all should be doing. So,
yes, indeed.
Yeah, go ahead and share with us a little bit about your expertise in helping people navigate with their money.
Well, I'll tell you a little bit about my own story and kind of how I ended up here. I think part of me creating what I call the Money Navigator methodology was born out of my own experience. It really came out of the fact that I was about 6 years, up until 6 years ago, a traditional financial advisor. You know, the ones that fully licensed, I was selling stocks, I was putting portfolios together, I was selling insurance. I understood money from a very fundamental basis, and I knew more about retail money than the common Joe. So up until 6 years ago, that's what I did. And the company that I was working with at the time, we had under management about $300 million. Our clients were trusting us with their money.
Right.
Mm-hmm. To manage their money, to make it grow, to help it increase, and all of that good stuff. But I can tell you personally, Kathleen, that with all of the knowledge that I had at the time, and I still have now, back about 6 years ago, I was waiting for my tax refund to pay off my credit card.
Okay.
So I had a debt problem that had nothing to do with what I know. Mm-hmm. Because from a knowledge perspective, I knew what I should be doing. I think all of us, on a fundamental level, we know that you cannot take away two from one, right? When we learned it in kindergarten, at least when I learned it, one take away two, we would say can't, because we would end up in negative territory.
Yeah.
Right. But somehow or other, that basic fundamental knowledge does not transfer in the same way when it comes to money. And I have to say that my own experiences with, I had two rather traumatic events happen where I realized that I could not keep going that way. I could not keep up what I was doing. And I'll tell you, honest to goodness, no word of a lie, one of the biggest things I feared was the shame of being discovered.
Oh, really?
The shame, knowing everything I know, and for somebody to find out, oh my goodness, she is a debt mess. Mine was a nightmare. So I get how much shame is tied to finances.
Definitely.
Creating that.
Especially if you're a person that's supposed to have this money, or like for your instance, you were working in the industry and you mismanaged your money, or it just was disappearing.
That's right. I think, in all honesty, a few things came out of that for me. One was, I realized it's not about what you know. We don't act predominantly based on knowledge. I think we had, I personally, and I had to accept the fact, and I'm saying it as a fact, I had to accept the fact that emotions play a huge part in how we manage our money. That was one. Another thing I had to learn was I had to ask for help. Until I asked for help, I didn't know the help that was out there for me. And I didn't make a place for myself at certain tables where learning was occurring, right? So as the shame and that, I guess that instinct to want to hide from it,
right,
really kept me tied in it, right? Because I fear of exposure will make me hide the fact that I'm even in need. So that kind of helped me to say, you know what? I have to do something. So I did some more learning. I went and I've done some positive psychology courses. I've done behavioral cash flow planning courses. And I've incorporated more of an understanding of who I am and superimposed that onto my financial journey. And that is how I created the Money Navigator methodology, because my success came out, one, it took a trigger, which was the crisis for me. It was both personal and financial. It took that trigger. And then it took me arming myself with not just numbers, but also equipping my mind and my heart. So I could get the results that I wanted in finances. So acknowledging cash flow, acknowledging what most people call budgeting, I call cash flow. Okay. We'll just say that now. But acknowledging that cash flow is not only about math, it's not just about the numbers, is very, very important for client success, not just today, but for the long term.
So tell me something. Is there a difference between budgeting versus cash flow, or is it pretty much the same?
I'll tell you why. It's pretty much the same thing, but I think what my research showed me is that the word budget and budgeting has a very negative connotation.
Yeah, that's true.
I remember talking to a couple, and the husband said to me, "Nobody is going to handcuff me and tell me how to spend my money." And I'm like, okay, that is true. And I'm not the one to do that. But that's the kind of connotation people have when you talk budgets. They think restriction. They think having to do without. They think they're going to miss out on something. Right. And just like those diets we take, where when we're done the diet, we binge on that thing that we had to do without.
Right, yeah.
Same thing happens with budgets. If we view it that way, that's typically the result. It does not last, it doesn't stick, and we get resentful. When I talk with my clients about cash flow planning is used in business. In our personal lives, we deal with cash flow, and I prefer to talk about cash flow because there is a natural ebb and flow of money in and out.
Right.
It almost mimics what money does in our lives and the role it plays. We don't earn money to hoard it. We actually earn money so we can exchange it for something else that we need, something that we want, and something that we have decided is of value to us. So I like to say that money is just a tool to be used, it's currency in exchange for something else, right? So in my thought process, when I'm working with clients, we're talking cash flow. It takes away the negative connotation, and it brings into a clear understanding the fact that money will come and money will go. It's a natural process. Yeah, right. It constantly is coming and going.
Right.
We just want to have a bit of control in how it comes in and how it goes out, so that you don't have any, you know, those rapids when you're approaching the waterfall, the water gets really crazy and rough. You don't want that experience with your money. You want to always understand where you're at, how it's moving. And that's why I deliberately choose the terminology of cash flow when we talk about managing our money.
All right. Gotcha. Thanks for clarifying that for me.
For sure. It's a wonderful thing, I think, once you kind of look at how you relate to money. And for a lot of us, I was brought up in the Caribbean. I came to Canada already as an adult. So a lot of my thought processes around money were framed when I was a child. And whether or not your parents actually talk to you about money, we're all creating our own concepts about what money is, what money does, and how money kind of plays with us or works, moves with us in our lives. So I think at the root of it, all of us, we start out with almost a, we're programmed with some experience as it regards to money.
True, yeah.
And in some cases, we want to go and do the exact opposite. So we're like, nope, this is how my parents did it. I don't want to do it that way. I think a lot of people saw their parents scrimping to save, working hard, and their money not doing anything for them. And as adults, they determine, you know what, I'm going to work and I'm going to make all this money because I never want to not have money. Sometimes it could be the opposite. Sometimes they see money come so easily that they have very little respect for the value or what it costs to earn that money. A lot of different mindsets get rooted in our childhood. And I think part of the issue is that we never really talked about it. Most parents from back then, we didn't talk about money. Money is that secret thing that you don't talk about. And I would really like to talk about money to anybody who will listen because there's power in taking the veil away and revealing what's in the background there. So starting at the root is
Sorry.
important.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
hear you. And you know what? I think to save headache down the road with your children, it's wise to teach them about money from a young age, even just a little piggy bank that they learn to save. If they get an allowance, learn to save, because eventually when they get older, they have a concept of money. They don't won't see it appear. They know that they had to work for it. They put their
Yes.
10% away or whatever the case may be, and they have a better understanding and appreciation of how to handle the money that they have when we teach them at an earlier age, I think.
Absolutely. I think it's easy. I mean, it's easy to train the vine when it's young,
Right,
right?
yes.
And if what I honestly, I think a lot of parents do try their best. I have to say that because I don't believe it's a question of parents being negligent about it. I just think a lot of parents don't know.
Right.
And because they're kind of trying to figure it out themselves, they feel inadequate to teach it to their children, which I think is missing out on a great learning opportunity. If as a parent you don't know, it's a great opportunity to learn with your children.
True.
It's a great opportunity to explore with them and at every age. Don't think that this is something that has to happen only with teenagers. At every age, we have that opportunity to teach and learn and grow together. So I totally commend the parents who, even if they may not know it all, they're happy to share with their children what they do know and then go out there and source additional information so they can learn and grow together. Kudos to those parents for sure.
Indeed, yeah, I agree. I agree. And you know what? It could be a learning and a fun process. I don't think,
Oh, it's absolutely
yeah, I
fun.
don't think we have to look at money being in a negative light, but we can make it fun and a good process of a way of learning too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
And
definitely.
it's difficult for parents who already may be struggling with money to not superimpose their negative experiences on their children. If the parent is struggling with that, I definitely say get some outside help to kind of lead that instruction,
Sure.
so that it's not a negative experience for your child just because it was negative or stressful for you. But there are a lot of resources out there that can help with those conversations. There are a lot of people out there that are actually creating financial literacy tools for elementary students and older, and bringing it to the forefront so that the parents who may not have all the answers can reach out and find those answers. Definitely worth doing.
That's excellent. Yeah.
So what I really wanted to share today, I guess, is really some of the, I'll call it a life hack. For those people who know what to do, but they're having trouble doing it. And really, that's what I specialize in. My clients are the ones that are having trouble creating and maintaining change when it comes to their finances. Because we all know when we're kind of doing the wrong thing. We kind of know when we're taking the wrong actions because the results are saying, oh my goodness, I've maxed out the credit card again. And my account is in overdraft again. You went online, you found this spreadsheet. The spreadsheet said to do this, that, and the other. You did it, and then something happened, and you're back in it again. My specialty is really the recurring failures to stop that and create recurring successes when it comes to your money. And that's where the math and the mindset come in. So I wanted to share with your listeners a few. Maybe a couple tips that I would work through with my clients, and none of this is a one size fits all type of response, because you really need to understand what's going to work best for you, based on your personality and how you work with money and all that jazz. I can't do that over the podcast's streams, but I can tell you some of the things that I have done with some clients in the past to kind of help them get to lasting results.
Awesome. I'm looking forward to it. I got my pen and paper in hand.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so here's one thing I like to suggest, reframing. So I don't know how many times I've heard people talk about money, their current financial situation, in negative terms. My understanding of how our minds work, even I'll say it from my experience as a Bible-believing Christian, what we focus on grows. If we focus on negative things are what continues to flourish and grow in our experiences. But if we focus on positive things are going to flourish and grow in our life experience. And it's the exact same thing with money. I can tell you that, let's just say, if we have an example where this person has, $20 left in the account, and they had an opportunity to go spend some time with a friend, but they needed maybe $200. The typical response, well, the ones we hear a lot, is, I can't afford that, I'm broke, right? Or, I ain't making no money. I don't know where the money gone. I'm not doing anything like that. I don't have no money. I think we really spend a lot of energy giving voice to negativity. And I will invite your listeners to be very deliberate to reframe any challenge that you're facing financially. Instead of saying, I'm broke, you can simply say, oh, there, I have no money assigned for this right now. This could be something I work on for next month or next few weeks. Or you could say, you know what? I am working on a challenge right now to make this happen in a few weeks. Or you can say instead, you know, right now, my money has done some great things for me, and there isn't left over at this point for this experience. We have to be very, you'd be surprised, and I'll challenge anybody to do it. You'd be surprised what happens when we reframe any supposed negative experiences in a more positive light. I find it to be very empowering, and I find it to be very motivating, as opposed to demotivating when you say you're broke. I'm motivated when I say my money has done great things for me already this month. I'm not able to do that with you at this time, but I can certainly plan for it some other time. You have brought into the whole conversation the fact that your money has served you, because it has.
What about if
You've
you
also
say it, is it okay to say I didn't budget for that this month? Or is that
you
negative?
certainly you certainly could say that, because if you're now saying you didn't budget for it, you have introduced in your psyche planning how you spend your money. Because a lot of times the reason why we don't have money to do what we want to do is because we didn't plan for the things we want to do.
Okay, true.
right? But if we're planning, for example, if you know you like to travel and you like to take, road trips every now and then, set aside a $50, $100, or whatever it is in every monthly allocation or whatever rhythm or cycle you get paid through, set aside a little money so that even if you're not taking the road trip today, there's a little bit of money there somewhere.
Building
So
up.
when opportunity comes up, you can freely, without having to go looking for it, that there's some money that will help you realize that experience. And I think planning what our money does for us is very, very, very important. So one of the things I pick on the celebrities a lot. I pick on celebrities that misbehave in public. And I say that this is what happens when money has no purpose.
Right. Yeah. Isn't that
When
all of
money,
them though, Adrian? Isn't that all of them though, Adrian?
no.
A good chunk of them.
A good chunk of them, because you know what? A lot of these people, they just want to do what they want to do. They're singers and they just want to sing, or they're actors and they just want to act. They really just want to do that thing that they loved, but they didn't bargain for all this money. And now what do I do with it? There's no purpose to the money, and the money ends up doing all sorts of stupidness all over the place, and the whole world has to witness purposeless money.
And that's where we see some of them go into bankruptcy and things like
Yep,
that
that's
often.
exactly it. That's exactly it. And the same, I remember working, one of the last offices I worked with before I became the money navigator. We worked with employees at a certain factory, very, very successful. I mean, everybody would recognize if I said the name. But these people had the opportunity to get bought out. So they worked for 30 years and they were being let go, essentially. And they were being let go with six-figure packages. I mean, good six-figure packages. Now, superimpose what I call a linesman's mental state. A person whose whole life, the last 30 years, has been standing at a on a line in a factory and repeating the same task zzz, 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 all day for the whole shift. That kind of thought process, take that thought process and put it on a $600,000 payout, right? So we had to field a lot of calls. So when clients call me and say, I want to take my money out, I cannot stop them, or I want to fix the trailer, or I need a new Jeep. I cannot stop them from doing that. It is their money, but it is my job to counsel and say, you can only spend this once. After you spend it that one time, we cannot recreate it. We can't do it again. So they had to change their thinking so that they could appreciate, one, the opportunity that they have now that they have this payout, but also the boundaries that they need to live within in order to be happy and healthy and purposeful with the money. So it goes a long way when we talk about the thought process behind how you're going to use your money. There's a lot of learning that we need to do. But when
Definitely.
money has no purpose, trust me when I say it is not pretty. It is not pretty at all.
I'm sure, yeah.
It is not pretty. But that's the other thing, planning, making sure you plan for it. Another little hack that I use is really tying your desired outcome to something that really propels you. What do I mean by that? I just said a whole lot of big words. Okay. What do I mean by that? Let's say, for example, you want to save and you're having trouble saving for a down payment for your house. Saving for a down payment for a house is one, for most people, a long-term venture. That's one, because not many people can just blink and save $30,000, $40,000. That's one. And two, because it is a long-term venture, it sometimes gets disheartening. You're trying to build a large stockpile of cash. So in the event where, as in this example, you're kind of saving for a house, one of the things we need to acknowledge is, are you I say, are you a marathoner or a sprinter? For some people, saving 5 years is no problem. They don't have a problem with just, steady on, do what I have to do. They just get, the mar when you're running marathons on the TV, you see them running and there's the little tables on the side with the glasses. They
With the
just run,
water.
they grab glass. I hope it's water. they grab a glass, they take a sip, they wet themselves, and then they just keep going. Some people are like that, but not all of us are that way. In fact, I think the majority of us are sprinters where we can hit something hard and then we stop. Now, understanding a long-term goal like saving for a down payment, that is definitely a marathon. But the person who has a sprinter personality needs to break that up. And when I say tie it to something that you're really passionate about, you really need to, instead of just thinking, I'm saving for a down payment for a house, you need to break that down. What does the house mean to you? That's when we start getting into the juicy stuff. Because if you're just saving for a house, it's just a compilation of bricks, drywall, mortar. That's what a house is. But what does a house mean to you? And for some people, a house could be freedom. For some people, a house could mean stability. For some people, a house is a milestone. For some people, a house is, okay, I've made it. When you can tie your outcome to something that really pulls you, I forget the name of this guy, but he said, pain pushes you until vision pulls you. And I thought that was profound
Very.
because it is so true. We can either respond to painful experiences that will push us and we will fight against it the whole time because nobody wants pain. But if we can tie our desires and our goals to a vision that is so compelling, it will pull us. It will pull us to it, and our realization of that goal will become like no effort at all because the vision is compelling enough to pull you. Tie that to your money. What goal is it that money is doing for you that you're having a hard time getting to? Is it something that you can kind of rephrase what you're going for, or go deeper, I should say, into why you're saving? So I had this prospect do a call with me. And my job is to challenge you, by the way, in finances. I'm challenging what you've always done because obviously it hasn't worked for you. But I remember her saying she really struggles with saving. So I said to her, what are you saving for? Oh, I don't know. I just want to save. I'm like, so what would you like to save for? She's like, nothing. Can't I just save? I said, yes, sure, you can just save. But what would it mean to have the to save this money? I just want to see it there. And I said to her, okay, great. How has that been working for you? Right? It has not. So, yes, we want to save, but why? What does it mean? And when we peel back a few layers, for her, saving is a safety net. For her, saving meant safety. And when we figured that out, she had no problems pre-authorizing her saving to automatically come out of her account
So
because she realized the safety in that. That's what it was to
that's
her.
So that's what she just didn't know how to maybe verbalize it. It was really a safety net until you were able to pull it out. I'm
Pull it
also,
out of her. And then she can focus on it as opposed to, oh, I just want the money there. It was not happening.
And okay, I get, I see that. I see that. So also I'm hearing that we must also have a purpose for our money. Unlike her, where she's saying she just wants to save, we have to have a plan for this money, what we're going to do, or else it just dwindles some way somehow. We don't have a focus or a plan or a purpose for the money.
Absolutely. I recently was sent a contact to get in touch with this lady who had reached out to a friend of mine, a mortgage agent. And this mortgage agent had spoken with her a year before and told her, you know, this is what she should do. In fact, she had put her in contact with me a year before. And of course, I didn't hear from her. I reached out. But fast forward to a few weeks ago, the same mortgage agent said, man, she had a hard talk with this girl last week because the money that she had set aside for a house purchase had disappeared, literally. It was about $50,000 and it
Wow.
was nowhere to be found,
Wow.
right? And I love it when people say, oh my goodness, that's something else. How can that happen? Oh, it can happen. Trust me, even with a spoken desire to own a home, the money still disappeared because simply saying I want to buy a house was not enough.
Obviously, yeah.
Right. And the money is gone now. And of course, I'm trying to reach out to her again, and she's not returning my calls. I think there are a few other things at play there, but it is so easy for money to disappear. Like I say that it goes under the door, seeps out through the window, it goes down the vent, you come inside with your paycheck, you turn around, and the money's gone.
That is so
Literally,
true.
the
Yeah,
money's gone,
it is so
right?
true. Yeah.
Very, very true. But when we
Sometimes you're
plan
not
for
even getting through the door with the money. It's already
girl,
gone.
when it hits the account, it disappears, and you wonder, did I get paid this week?
Exactly, right.
Right. But then I think that's the thing too. A lot of times when we are dealing with our money, we are very reactive instead of being proactive. So kind of I guess that's the other kind of life hack I would share is to anticipate instead of always having to react. Anticipate the things that are coming. I always say to my clients, listen, Bridgen, winter tires is not an emergency.
Right.
Every year, this is Canada, we live in Canada, winter comes every year.
Yeah.
So we cannot be depending on our emergency funds to be doing oil changes and buying winter tires. We need to plan for these things. And that way it doesn't catch us off guard. So we have a good time, we have a good laugh with those things, but it really comes down to that. If we can anticipate as much as possible, we can be on the offense instead of on the defense
Defense,
when it
yeah.
comes to our money. And we are so beautifully positioned when we do that. That's my thought with really taking the best advantage of our
And it
finances.
doesn't shock you when you, because you have a plan in place. You're not shocked when you don't have money. You already know ahead of time whether you're going to have enough or you're going to have not enough, right?
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's
Right.
exactly it. And I think that's the other thing with cash flow, the terminology of cash flow. There are going to be times I relate. I have a little PDF that I share, which relates to kind of growing your own money tree. That's what I called it, how to grow your own money tree. And it really relates to the fact that if we look at nature, every season is not a harvest season. And every season is not winter either.
Right.
But we go through the same flows with our money. Every season has its purpose. Sometimes in the spring is when is when everything starts to bloom and blossom. It's probably a season in your life financially where, you know, the things that you planted, the effort that you put in before, you're starting to see fruition. But there comes a time in the winter where you don't see it on the outside. So there's no fruit on the tree on the outside. The leaves fall off in order to make, so it's a lean time for you financially, but that does not mean that there's anything wrong. If you have a solid cash flow plan in place, you know that this is the winter of your earning. This is the time when you go inside. So
Right.
the tree that looks dead on the outside is busy surviving and creating and laying things down for the future when they will spring and thrive. So I think it's unfair for us to think that our cash flow will always be in a spring and harvest type cycle.
And when you put it the way that you just, stated just now, it makes it seem so much more easier and to know that your money's not just going nowhere. It's doing something, and you just maybe not seeing it right now, but you will see the results in the springtime, as you say, right?
That's right. That's right. And the springtime, if you know what you planted and you have nurtured it well, you won't be surprised by what springs up out of the ground, right? So if you know that you have invested your money for vacations, you know that you've invested your money or you've been saving your money for your children's education. If you know while things might be lean to the person looking from the outside, you know your money is on purpose doing what it needs to do for this season of your financial experience. It's okay. It's quite all right. And I think when we let go of this, the keeping up with the Joneses, where I need to look as good as this other one and I need to be in the same season as this other one, we start putting fake fruit on our tree
That's true,
to make it look like it's spring and harvest or it's spring and fall for our cycles. The energy we waste, the money we waste trying to make it look like what it is not, is money that could have been better invested to really create a healthy financial experience for our whole family. And listen, when families thrive, communities thrive. So
Definitely, definitely.
it's not just about what you are doing and your experience. Imagine if all of us together could just decide to take one purposeful action with our money. Just one. Imagine the impact that could have.
Indeed, right?
Yeah,
Huge,
definitely.
huge.
One thing I will share probably in addition is the whole idea of money personalities, and I have a quiz that I have on my website. Your viewers are free to go and take a look at it. Understanding your money personality, how you relate to money, I think is a good stepping stone. And I'll just tell you that for me, I'm a fantasizer. At my base level of relating to money, I will tell you if the end is what I want, I'll do anything to get there. And that's the base that I started with. You know, I want the car. Okay, the car is $50,000. Let me see what I got to do, where I have to get it from. I make this happen and I'll deal with the rest later. That I live in recreating fantasy. But once I found that out about myself, I put some boundaries around my fantasy. So I only have so much fantasy money. I know where my weakness is, so I put some safeguards so that I can still operate in my natural state, but that natural state should not compromise the well-being and long-term planning that I have.
Because I mean, we even though we're making the money, we still need to be able to enjoy some of it at the same time as we're saving it, right? Because I mean, it will just
Listen,
make things
girl.
dull.
I am a firm believer that you only live once. There's a scripture in the Bible that says, I will experience God's bounty in this life, and I fully expect to experience God's bounty in this life. I know a lot of people are waiting for heaven. I'm sorry, but he put me here to not just sh shine his light, but he also wanted me to have and experience good, wonderful things because he's a good, wonderful God. So I have no aversion to life's pleasures. I have no aversion to it. It will not compromise me. It will not compromise my beliefs. It will not compromise the purpose that I'm here to do. But I have no aversion to that. To be honest with you, Kathleen, as of today when we're recording this, 5 days away, Friday coming, I was supposed to be on a flight to Amsterdam, and COVID-19. Oh my God! I held out all the way to the end. I mean, it's a beautiful world out there, and we saved and we put money aside. We did it. It was booked since the year before, so I don't have a problem with experiencing the beauty, the bounty, all that there is in life. I will not do it irresponsibly.
Right.
And I will not do it in a way that compromises the things I need to accomplish in this life. But listen, I have no aversion to money. None whatsoever.
I hear you. You know, I want to go back to something that we discussed sometime last week. You made the comment about Christians are afraid of money.
Yes.
I want you to expound on that a little bit more. What exactly did you mean when you said that?
I get in trouble sometimes, but I think the way we have been indoctrinated as Christians, there seems to be this idea that money compromises us. I mean, there are more scriptures quoted about how bad money is than about the fact that it is a tool that we need to leverage. And I think a lot of Christians come and look at money as something that should not be pursued. And I agree that the love of money is a problem. But right. As Christians, we need to stop being afraid. Many of our patriarchs in the Bible were wealthy beyond
words. Exactly,
And it did not compromise them. The thing is, they did not go after money. They went after being a good steward. That's the difference. The truth of the matter is, if we are good stewards, like in the parable of the talent, we will see multiplication. And it'll be the natural thing to happen.
That is so true. I remember my first few years of being in the church, and they were looking to do a fundraiser. And one of the elders mentioned that people should do love offerings. And being new to the church, I thought, okay, so I donated a certain amount. And I'll tell you no lie, and I just did it from the generosity of my heart as a single mother. And I just said, I'm just going to donate this amount. I didn't bat an eye or anything like that. I'm telling you no word of the lie. The next week, I had almost double that amount that I had donated.
That's right.
I do believe as Christians that it is more better to give than to receive. And when the more you give is the more you receive. And
that's right.
Hadriana, I'm seeing that come out to play more and more and more. I'm going to tell you, yes, I was one of them that grabbed on and held on to my money. But I'm learning now, definitely, it's definitely more better to give than to receive, because God will bless you abundantly. I've seen that.
He always does. And the bounty is immeasurable. The bounty is immeasurable. Even when I remember the parable or the story shared about the widow with the two pennies or the two mites, that goes a long way. The intention we put behind what we're doing with our money, I think, has the capacity to multiply it way beyond what we could think or imagine. Mm-hmm. That has been my experience. So the same person, someone else could have also gone and given two mites. Maybe someone who's just as poor as this lady, someone whose situation is just as desperate as this lady, but because a different intention was put on the delivery of these two pennies, the outcomes are different. And so I think a lot of times we look at dollar value as opposed to intention. And we need to stop that, because there is wealth at every single level of earning. I don't understand why people say they're poor. Sometimes we create certain situations that make it hard for us to make it in a certain environment financially. But I believe even in the projects, we are wealthy because we have opportunity. How we leverage that, how we reframe that, how we leave ourselves open to letting purpose be achieved through us. I think all of that goes into us creating lives that are bountiful and really, really representative of how a Christian should live on earth.
Definitely, I agree. What would you say is people's biggest mistake when it comes to managing their money, in your experience?
I think it's probably, you know what, probably the reactionary way that we manage. We manage afterwards as opposed to taking a more proactive approach. Because, like, so here's Here's another one that I dealt with 2 weeks ago. Another consult called me. This is someone who knows what I've done for a number of years now. Didn't call me last year, but called me a few weeks ago and says, "You know, I did this thing. I consolidated all the money, all of the debts I had into this program, and the guy said it was not a proposal. He said it's a consolidation. Only to pull my credit file, and he says it's my credit now shows that I'm in a consumer proposal. What can I do?"
Wow.
I'm like, "I can't do nothing. You're in, right?" Whereas we're trying to fix what has already been done. And I find that it really, for me personally, it breaks my heart, because if this person had come to me a year ago, accelerating debt elimination is my jam. That's what I do. Instead of taking 25 years, you can be out in 7. That's my jam. But instead, consolidated with someone else, now I have to give tips on how to minimize the impact of a consumer proposal and what to do with some monies that she may or may not get. I mean, it makes it so much harder
And that could have
if
been
we.
prevented too if they had only come to
Yeah, absolutely. Instead of starting how many steps behind the starting line, take a foundation, mark a spot, and say, "This is the spot. Let me do some proactive, anticipatory planning and find the resources that'll help me to do that." Right? That way, you get to the finish line that much faster. Right, and you get to where you're going without having to start at a deficit. But that takes planning. That takes planning. But anybody that I work with, I'll tell you honestly, day one is always ground zero. It doesn't make sense to look back. When we look back, what's done cannot be undone. But if we can commit that from today, from this point, we're going to take the step. Sometimes you can only do one thing. Sometimes you can only do that one step of saying, "Okay, I will pre-authorize my savings." Even if it's not $100 every paycheck, maybe it's $25 every paycheck. You're not looking at how much you're saving, you're looking at the fact that you have started a savings habit, right? So little things like that, like for example, if you can live your life on your regular pay, any overtime goes to a specific savings venture, right? So your overtime, you know, when you do overtime, whether it's time and a half you're getting, or maybe your regular, whatever it is, having a plan for that overtime is going to ensure that your overtime doesn't get wasted. And we
True.
work so hard for
I
it.
know, right? And
Right.
something else that I do is when I get paid, I ask the accounting department, the payroll, to please deduct a certain amount from my pay before I even get the pay. And because chances are, if I go to try and do it, I may never do it. I might say, "Oh, I need this bit of money for something." Whereas if I'm having it taken out and put into another bank account before I even see it, I know it's locked away right away.
That's right, and that's being proactive. It kind of it helps you to neutralize any negative habits that you have and creates a positive experience around how you manage your money. So you're still the one in control. You're still the one making the decisions and saying, "This is what I want to do. And this is important enough that I do not want to self-sabotage. I will have this done through this means for this amount of time, goal achieved." Celebrate that.
So tell me something. I was a single mother and it was quite a struggle. Speak to the one, speak, help me understand. How would you help somebody who they understand the money concept of saving and so forth, but just finding it so hard from month to make ends meet and to even put aside some money? How would you help that person? What advice would you give to that person?
Yeah, I typically would I helped a client like that. I think a lot of what you're going to have to do for that single parent or just that person who's having a really difficult time,
Yes.
you're going to win that battle in your mind first. And the challenge will be creating positive experiences out of the challenge that you currently face. So instead of thinking about what you cannot get for your children, incentivize your children to appreciate the value of hard work. Incentivize your children so that they can appreciate and understand the value of every dollar that you earn that you could put together to create the life experiences that they want. So, what does that look like? If your children want shoes or sneakers or what have you, and they want the ones their friends have, and so on and so forth, talk with them, explore with them how together as a family we can come up with that money. The conversations are very interesting. Right now, my 12-year-old daughter is dog walking. She loves dogs. She really would do it for free, but her mother taught her that there's value in it. There's value in it for the person who gets their dog walked. So there's nothing wrong with charging $10 to walk a dog for half an hour. You're happy, they're happy, everybody
It's a
wins, right?
win-win,
It's a win-win all around. So why don't we have the conversations not out of I guess not from the perspective of lack, but from the perspective of opportunity. I think my older daughter, she had a paper route when she was 9. She did it for a couple of years and she was over it very quickly. She did it for maybe 2 years, I think, 3 years. But that taught her the effort that has to go into making money. It don't grow on trees, right?
And that's where they learn their appreciation of it and the value of
That's
money at that
right.
time too.
That's right. And I think the single moms are so used to doing it all on their own, they forget that they have advocates in their children. In fact, I think if anything, your children are your biggest supporters. Once they have an understanding, they are your biggest supporters. So make finances a family event. Don't just sit and talk about the negative things that you don't get. Talk about what money did get for you. Talk about what you were able to achieve with the money that you have at your disposal. And I always recommend, whether you're having a hard time or not, I always recommend monetizing a hobby. I call it monetizing a hobby because a lot of times single parents go and try to get a second job. The second job, I think, compromises your ability to be available for your family because it takes up your time. And a lot of the times it's time that you cannot control. So they would leave one job, come home, spin around 2 times, and then have to go out and do another shift or another something else. I highly recommend monetizing a hobby. It's something you already know how to do. It's something you already enjoy doing. Set some boundaries around when you do it. And if you can do it from home, even better. See if you can monetize a hobby to bring in some extra money.
That is excellent idea.
The truth of the matter is money is finite. There's no way you can pull $1,500 out of a $1,000 paycheck unless you end up in debt. So if your situation requires that you earn more, then that is how I recommend earning more. Not going to do another JOB because between the taxes, the time, and the physical just drain of a second job, I think it's a lose-lose, these second jobs most of the time,
That's
right?
that's true.
So.
That's true. I like that, the monetizing in a hobby. I know so many people that are into whether sewing on the side or baking, cake baking and things like that. So definitely that is something to look into. Very good.
Yeah, I had a great conversation not long ago with a young lady. She has a mentally challenged son, and the care program that supervises him only goes up until, I think, close to her work hours. So she really cannot leave him unsupervised. So she had a challenge. She wanted to do a second job, but she could not. So we started exploring what are the things you're good at. And it's sometimes that's such a hard conversation because most people never stop and think about their gifts outside of that thing that they do to make money.
J-O-B,
and
right,
yeah, it's like, oh, I'm just a secretary. No, you're not just a secretary. That's not all you do, and that certainly does not define you.
Right.
So we peeled back, you know, what do you enjoy doing? What do you like doing? She loves to cook. She loves to cook. And from my understanding, she cooks very well. She gets high praise. So our thought was, you know what, during this COVID-19 thing, there are a lot of West Indians that would love to get a meal with some good flavor.
Right.
The seniors that want a taste of home, but they probably cannot get it because family cannot come over, what have you. Why don't we connect with some of those? Why don't we connect with some of those caregivers? Why don't we connect with some of those, you know, PSW places and all that, to see if we can get a program going?
A meal
you
service,
know, when the
yeah.
PSWs go in, they can deliver a meal service. All it takes is her Sunday for her to prepare the meals, package them, and deliver them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you tell me, Kathleen, one meal could easily go, let's say, $10 for a meal.
Exactly, yeah.
If that person wants five meals, one a week, you can make $50 from what would probably be a $5 or $10 net investment.
True,
in
yeah.
getting the raw materials and some of her time. Now, extrapolate that to a number of orders coming in from a number of other people that want to get some tasty food that still meet all the health requirements, you know, not too salty, not all too
right.
sweet, and all that stuff. There's a market for it.
Definitely, definitely.
So let's do that. I'm not sending this lady out anywhere for her to compromise the safety of her child. But sometimes we just need to think outside of this box that we create for ourselves or society has put there and says you can only play in here. Mm-hmm. There is no box. Break it. It's an illusion in your mind. Go out there and create for yourself. You're good at it. You enjoy doing it. Who's going to pay you for it? Find that person.
Excellent. I like that. I like that a lot. Thanks for sharing that extra tip there.
Yeah, my pleasure.
So you've given us some really good information that we can put to practical use, like reframing the mindset and how we think about money. Shouldn't be thinking about in a negative focus that I can't do this right now because I can't afford it, but you know, it's just, I can't do it right now because I haven't budgeted it for it. It's the choice of words that we use about about our money and things like that, right?
Yep.
So, yeah, I learned quite a bit from you today. And I'm thanking you so much for sharing with us. Do you have any last words that you want to say?
You know what? Embrace money. Embrace the fact that it is a tool to help you live your life's purpose. Stop thinking of it negatively, think of it positively, and welcome it into your life so it can be part of you realizing that purpose you have. I think that would be my thing. It is neither good or evil, it's just a tool.
Awesome, brilliant. Well, hey, Adriana, I want to thank you for being with us today and sharing your expertise in money and navigating our way with money. And I know someone has gained something today. I know I personally have gained some information. So thank
Wonderful.
You for taking the time out to be with us here today. Much appreciated.
My pleasure, Kathleen. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to the show today. I hope you enjoy the topic and found something that you can apply to your own life. Don't forget to share this episode with your family and friends. And remember, live well daily. Thank you.